This is Tips and Tactics and Full Draw Fitness. And you are listening to the Archery Maniacs Podcast. We launched an updated website at www.archerymaniacs.com. Go there and you will find Archery Maniac Taxidermy. Our taxidermy includes European mounts, hydrographic skull dips, and custom artwork, customizable video packages, packages to fit all your hunt needs, monthly newsletter. The newsletter will include success stories, failure stories, gear reviews, wild game recipes, upcoming episodes in our online series, and upcoming podcasts, and updates to our YouTube online series called Live Life at Full Draw. Alert, alert! Soon to launch our ebooks, Hunt Planner Guide, all the steps you need to plan your next DIY dream hunt, including specific questions, hunt plans, and step-by-step instructions. Keto dehydration. Make your own dehydrated keto meals for your hunting and backpacking adventures. Super tune your bow, beginner's bow tuning guide, and more. Thank you for tuning into the show, and we appreciate you checking out the website. If you are looking to take your backcountry abilities to the level you've always wanted, contact Elevation Fitness Training and see how their personalized program can get you the results you've been waiting for. Mention Archery Maniacs and get 10% off the training package of your choice. Health is a lot more than what we can see on the outside. It's how we fuel ourselves, train, recover, balance life, and manage stress. Nutrition Realign is a holistic approach to health, making sure that you are feeling your best and ready for any adventure. Do you suffer from target panic? Has buck fever affected your shot control at the moment of truth? Learn the science of shot control at ShotIQ.com. Joel Turner's controlled process shooting program will give you the tools to succeed in extreme stress shooting situations. Decide to succeed with ShotIQ.
Now,
let's
get
into
the show.
In this episode of Tips and Tactics, Stephen Don and Courtney Levesque, founders of Elevation Fitness Training, hop on the podcast and we talk about nutrition in your pack. This is part one because the podcast went a little long, which is awesome because having the right nutrition on your extended hunts in the backcountry is extremely important. So enjoy part one and be on the lookout next week for part two.
My name's Stephen Dunn. I'm a co-owner and co-founder of Elevation Fitness Training, and I'm a lifelong hunter, athlete, lover of everything outdoors, and we're out here in Oregon hunting and fishing and raising two little boys and living life, man, having a great time.
And I'm Stephen's co-owner and co-founder of Elevation Fitness Training, and we get to have an amazing job where we get to work with people from all over the country on their health and fitness goals, and really just get people feeling good, whether that be for, you know, running marathons or triathlons or, you know, getting ready for a backcountry hunt or a hunt of a lifetime. So we really get to enjoy that. We work with some great people. We get to have a lot of fun with our two little guys and, you know, travel around and do some archery shoots and, just enjoy life and have fun and eat well and appreciate the good things.
That's awesome. Awesome. Well, I am super excited to have the both of you on the phone. Everyone that is listening, I'm your podcast host, Zach Harold. Today we are going to dive into the tips and tactics of nutrition in your backpack for living and hunting out of your backpack. So I think nutrition, especially on a hunt, is arguably right next to having a good enough sleeping pad to get the rest you need. I think nutrition is one of the most important things that you can have on an extended hunt, especially. What is kind of your approach to getting started on what you need in your pack, and what are some of the steps that you've taken to refine that so that you're not just dumping a bunch of stuff in your pack and giving her hell?
Yeah, good question. So it's kind of evolution for us, just figuring out, you know, initially what works, and kind of depends on where we're going to be hunting, you know, whether it's going to be in the tree stand or if we're going to be on the ground, and then, you know, what terrain and elevation look like. But, you know, I'm kind of the food connoisseur. I make sure that, you know, our packs are ready to go with, you know, just whatever's going to sustain us for the day. We do a lot of snacky kind of stuff rather than, you know, stopping to eat, you know, or bust out the jet boil or anything. So, you know, we'll do a lot of prepared string cheese, mixed nuts, high fat nuts, almonds, macadamia nuts, Brazil nuts kind of things. Steven, it's kind of a tradition for him to have a PB&J sandwich with like triple the amount of like almond butter in it. So, we kind of joke about that. That's a staple for us. I'm a string cheese and mixed nuts and jerky kind of person. So really just depends on exactly where we're going to be, but you know, lots of available quick, easy things. And, you know, some people don't care about, you know, the potency of the smell of, you know, whatever you're snacking on. But for me, I'm kind of like, I'm really particular when it comes to like noise or smells when I'm hunting, maybe a little bit too much. So I try to get things that aren't going to be, you know, super potent or things that we're going to be, you know, sweating out, you know, down the road.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. You mentioned something, you know, with you focus on stuff that have a little bit higher fat content. When it comes to your hunting trip, are you focusing more on like a ketogenic style plan so that your body is fueled more off of the fat intake, or do you guys take high carbs and high fat because obviously you're putting it out when you're covering that much country? What's kind of your approach as far as fat or carbs?
So in the past, we've really focused on just having a combination of both high carb and high fat. The fat is going to leave you more satiated than the carbohydrate will, but the carb is going to, for that kind of energy output, give you more of a more quickly delivered energy. So we've always done kind of a combination. We've switched our game up, though, a little bit since last hunting season. I've switched to doing a 100% keto diet. And Steven's kind of eyeing it right now as something he might do. So next year, our game plan, or excuse me, this year will probably change a little bit and focus on just doing the high fat because, you know, for somebody who's not keto adapted or used to that kind of thing, starting out and just saying, I'm going to take only high fat, you know, food items for the trip because I want to run on that, the fat system. It's not that simple. It's not just going to happen overnight. So I wouldn't recommend somebody just going, hey, for my backcountry, I'm going to go keto. So, you know, you need to work yourself into that before you just jump into it. So
no,
otherwise it might be not so fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, your body, when you have a high carbohydrate diet, your body craves that sugar, right? That those carbohydrates get changed into sugars in your blood and in your system. And so, you know, what happens is like when you give a kid candy, right? 30 minutes later, they either want more candy or they're angry, right? They're fired up or they're upset or they get frustrated or, you know, and even adults are the same way. So if you were to just, you know, kind of speaking on what Courtney said, if you were to just change and say, you know what, today I'm going to live on some eggs and avocados and a bunch of cheese. If you haven't done that for a while and adapted your body to it, you're gonna be pretty hangry.
Yeah, you're gonna hit a wall and be wishing you had something different.
Yeah.
But, you know, last year when we went on one of our longer trips over in Eastern Oregon, I've truthfully never had a mountain house in my life. I've only kind of heard things about them. So I decided that we would go to Cabela's and buy a 10 tray dehydrator, and I dehydrated all of our food for the trip. So we ended up doing like a bunch of like veggie bowls with quinoa and I can't remember what meat we did. I think we ended up doing some chicken, which is not, I'm not a super big fan of, but it was kind of an easier thing to do at the time. And then you can just do like a little, excuse me, like tub of coconut oil. We have that by the pounds at our house, literally.
Yeah, we scoop it out with shovels.
So, you know, adding coconut oil in there for the healthy fats. He's not kidding. I mean, we pretty much do. It's kind of a thing of ours, but man, it feels good. I'm not a morning person at all. When he said that he scheduled this for an 8:30 on Saturday morning, I kind of like backhanded him, but I do it. So in the morning for my coffee, I do a tablespoon of butter, a tablespoon of coconut oil, MCT oil, and heavy cream. So I'm like about to start doing jumping jacks as we talk.
That's good. I can feel the excitement. My wife is actually, I tried keto. And I didn't notice a huge difference personally, but I probably wasn't doing it completely the right way. I did notice at first that the switchover, like you're talking about, was horrendous because I eat literally all day, you know? So the switchover from snacking on like granola bars or, you know, eating four sandwiches or whatever else to eating string cheese and almonds and things like that was rough. But I did notice, just like you're saying, once I got switched over, then I was able to consume the fat and, you know, not straight fat, obviously, but we did much like you guys did. We started dehydrating our own meals. We actually bought some of like the powdered heavy cream and powdered cheese and things like that. So we made full-blown keto meals like Mountain House does, except for they were, you know, 1 or 2 grams of carbs and very high in fat content. And when I was on keto, right, that was great. But as soon as I got off keto for a week or whatever, if I tried eating just that again when I was up in the mountains, it just destroyed me, just like you're talking.
Yeah, it's not a you know, it's not like a stoplight. You can't, it's not very switchable, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not one of those things. And I hear people say, you know what, let's have a cheat meal. And I'm more of the mindset of thinking, well, that's like saying today I'm going to hold a lighter to my hand because I haven't been doing that for a while and I'm going to see if I like it. It's like, it's not a really good idea to ever do it, right? If you create this habit and you keep going with it in anything, in fitness and in nutrition and anything, you know, you want to stick with that because there's no point in your gut flora, your GI tract, all that stuff. It doesn't say, you know what, today, go ahead and take a cheat meal. We're going to do everything completely different than what's, you know, biologically been blueprinted into your body. And just let us know when you're going to do it, and then we'll be ready for it, you know? So it's the same thing. You gotta kind of either stick to one or the other, and you definitely don't want to have all those high carbs with all that high fat because that's when bad stuff happens, so.
And that's the thing. I have a lot of people say, well, I think I'm going to do the keto diet, or I've heard about the ketogenic diet. I think I'm, and I'm like, hold on, let's have a couple sessions of just talking about what that means first, because it's not like, you know, I'm going to go paleo today, or I'm going to, you know, some of those things that you can do, and your metabolic pathways don't have such a great effect that if you screw it up, it's going to have, you know, adverse effects. But if you go keto or try keto or whatever you want to call it, and then by the end of the day, you're eating a bowl of ice cream, you know, you're screwing things up big time. Now you've had a really high fat diet and now you're, you know, have this huge insulin spike. It's just not good chemically for your body to do that. So, you know, I really encourage people, if you're wanting to do it, do some research, you know, read some books, figure it out, you know, ask questions and make sure that you're really prepared for it before you go all in with it. And once you do, commit to it. It can't be a bouncing around kind of a lifestyle.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I noticed that exact same thing. Because I've never paid attention. I just ate whatever I wanted. So when I switched over to the keto, you know, it's all of a sudden goes from whatever I want, I don't really care, to I need to look and see what has carbs and what's high in fat.
I had no idea that everything under the sun was that high in carbs.
Yeah. I mean, that's the American diet, you know, unfortunately. And the other misconception I hear a lot of folks, you know, and mom, I love you. But you know, my mom is one of those people that, she's, you know, very highly educated. She's extremely intelligent. She's, you know, a loving, giving person, but sometimes those loving, giving things are like, here's more biscuits and gravy. And how about some donuts? And
I love biscuits,
you know,
and gravy too.
I love donuts. I really
I love
bowls. Donuts. So, right. Yeah. So, you know, she would, I remember growing up, she would always be like, well, I'm going to try this diet, or I'm on a diet. I'm gonna do this diet. And I think what's important, without, you know, pushing it too hard, is anything that you put in your mouth that you're chomping on, you know, filling your face with, is a diet. The food that you eat is your diet, right? It's not like ABC on the left hand side of the table is a diet and the stuff on the right is food. It's all right. It all has its dietary issues and components and nutrition and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's one of the biggest, well, I'm on this A to Z Tuesday and Thursday diet that I found on Pinterest a couple of days ago. And I'm, you know, it's like, what are you doing to go? It's the same thing we do with all of our fitness programming. What is it trying to achieve in your life? Because that's how we're going to train you, right? That's how we're going to program. It's not, you know, curls for the girls are going to help you drag that elk quarter up the hill. So it's very, you know, it's very event specific. It's a lifestyle. It's one of those things that you just say, when I put my boots on, I lace them up the same way every time, right?
That you're taking snacks and things like that to basically eat throughout the day. At what point do you guys, you know, as far as length of stay, do you transfer from just having snacks throughout the day to, okay, we're going to be there long enough that we need to eat one or two solid meals along with those snacks per day?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think by when she said snacks, so what we did was for probably a week before, I say we, I was, you know, I was working a lot. She was actually the food, the camping and hunting food dehydration queen. you know, hit and run kind of deals, but blown, you know, chicken, you know, and she dehydrated a ton of vegetables. So we had these prepackaged meals, you know, and she wrote on what exactly it was and how much water to add. And, you know, we could just throw the jet boil on the side of the hill somewhere upwind of whatever we were, wherever we were at, you know, cause we were back, we were off the grid quite a ways. And, you know, we'd have a meal and it would only take, you know, on average 2.5 or 3 cups to get both meals completely done. And that was juice to go for several more hours, you know. And when we were back at camp, you know, at the end of each day, we still had, you know, a giant cooler full of food, but a lot of that stuff was prepackaged. It was labeled, you know, with instructions on it. And she even put cool little sayings on it, you know, like hunt hungry or don't hunt at all, or, you know, this is going to be the tagged out meal, or all kinds of fun stuff, you know, because when, at the end of the day, when your feet are cold and you're miserable and you're pissed off because you got within, you know, 50 yards of some giant screaming bull and, you know, it is what it is. And it was fun to have these, you know, even little enlightening things as far as sayings written on your food packs.
Absolutely.
That was good. But, you know, a lot of the little snacky kind of things were still dehydrated meals, or were something that, you know, she put together that wasn't prepackaged, you know, it wasn't processed.
I did bags of oatmeal with like slivered almonds and a scoop of Wilderness Athlete paleo-ish protein, so that all we had to do was right in the bag, just add some water. And I'm not saying that that's the best way to go to, you know, to heat up the food in the bag, but it worked for us. It was really easy and convenient. We didn't have to take a bunch of extra weight with things. So it was pretty nice. And it was kind of fun. Like he said, it was kind of something we got to look forward to. And when we were back there and just freezing cold, holding that nice hot bag of oatmeal was really nice.
Oh my God.
It was fun. I'll do it a little bit different this year. We'll add a little bit more variety. We kind of did the same, few meals, and we just kind of repeated those, which I'm not a picky eater at all. So I don't have an issue with that. Some people, like to have something different every time or avoid leftovers or whatever. But for me, that just, it makes things more efficient and easier to prepare.
Yeah, for sure. I had no problem repeating that either. Neither one of us are picky eaters, which is funny because our youngest is the pickiest little human that you've ever met, ever. What's in that?
He'll like get his food and he'll smell it. He'll go, man, I don't think I'm gonna like that.
But he'll eat sardines out of the can. He's such a little weirdo like that. Or he's like, is that, any game meat, anything, any game meat at all, he's on it. He eats it like a wood chipper. The shrapnel all around him. I'm serious, man. It's it's funny and all, but it's true. And you could give them we typically don't feed our kids a bunch of cereal and stuff like that. But every now and then they're like, we want some freaking cereal, But if it's got he'll eat handful of nuts, but if the cereal has nuts in it, he's like, I'm not eating that shit. I'm not doing that. Come on,
hell
man.
No.
Or almond milk. That's the other thing. So typically what I'll do is I'll get up really early in the morning. Because I'm just a morning person, and I like to get up and I like to make, Court and I coffee, and I'll make the boys love pancakes. So I always make them gluten-free pancakes, and I'll put a little bit of protein powder in there, whatever, and I slather peanut butter all over them, and it's our morning thing, it's fun. But man, I'll tell you what, dude, if I give him a freaking cup of almond milk, he doesn't even have to smell or taste it. He looks at it. He's so dialed into that stuff. He's like, what kind of milk is that? that regular milk? I'm like, dude, you're 8. What? We're keeping you alive.
Drink the damn milk.
Is that real milk? That's what it says. Yeah. Drink the milk now or go outside.
That actually brings up kind of an interesting topic as far as, liquids when you go hunting. Do you guys take basically just water, or are you taking stuff where you're adding, electrolytes and things like that? What all are you taking as far as your liquids go?
Definitely not just doing water. Steven's he gets crampy if he doesn't replace electrolytes. I typically do okay and regulate all right, but we do the Wilderness Athlete Rehydrate and Recover. So we'll typically just do that once a day, kind of midday, we'll stop and have some of that. And, outside of that, yeah, we just do water, hydrate and recover and keep the fluids coming in. I have to remind myself to drink water because especially if it's a cold hunt, mm-hmm. I don't want to drink water. It doesn't taste very good to me, but also it's kind of hard to stop and unpack everything and, find a tree. So, I have to push water a little bit more than he does, but if we don't replace those electrolytes, we kind of struggle out there. So,
gotcha. I've noticed the exact same thing. If it's cooler temperatures that I'm hunting in, I have to tell myself to drink the water because on not even temperatures when it's that I hunted 2016. I hunted for 3 days. I made 3 liters last.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Which isn't, and I'm not saying that, to toot my horn, because I don't think that's healthy. I know it's not healthy.
No,
but,
it's not.
But I was not, I wasn't mentally telling myself drink water because I didn't feel thirsty. It was 60 to 75 degrees, not a temperature where I was sweating a ton or anything like that. And I just never felt that thirsty. And so I completely right. agree with that.
We definitely have to kind of be accountability buddies on that one because I'm the same way, maybe even worse. I'll get back with my 2 liters and I've had just a couple sips out of it. So, I'm really good at reminding Steven, okay, how much water have you drank? How much water do you have left? And that kind of reminds me too, okay, I need to push some water in. And, even though you're not out there sweating, your body's using it up, it's not just, the sweating that you know, where your body loses water, although that's one pathway for it. But if you're not drinking water, you're going to feel it. It's going to add up. And, you know, that's when situations become not favorable.
Yeah, for sure. I'm a water drinking fool, and, you know, I have a 3-liter hydration pack. And, you know, I remember elk hunts several years ago where it's, you know, 2 or 3 degrees or below zero. And I actually would take that. I have a really thick, I can't even remember the brand of it. Anyway, I'd pump them if I could, because this thing is bulletproof, but a 3-liter hydration pack. And I would actually strap a couple hand warmers to it, because it was so cold. And I'm not a fan of, I don't put ice in my water. I don't, you know, I had several of my, yeah. Well, it's just, so, you know, to train in Brazilian jiu-jitsu for a long time, being in Brazil, they don't put ice. A lot of the, like, the hardcore Brazilian athletes, they don't put ice in their water because it constricts your esophagus. And so if you need to stop from training to get a drink of water, and you go back to training and you've got this person crawling all over you trying to, you know, trying to get the best of you, it's hard to breathe. Yeah. So I remember one time giving Helsing Gracie a glass of ice water, and he looked at me and he's like, "What are you trying to do to me, brother?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "Never, don't drink ice with water, or don't drink water with ice in it. You know, just have room temperature or warmer." And he says, "Watch how much you can drink and how good it feels in your stomach." And so I started trying that, and I actually remember getting these you know, adhesive backed. Maybe they were toe warmers. I think they were toe warmers because they would stick to your sock. And I put two of those on there and just had, you know, one, it kept it from freezing. And two, it was just kind of like a room temperature water at, you know, in a 2 or 3 degree temp hunting scenario. And it just, man, it kept me warm, to be honest with you. It was really nice.
It's amazing how much a warm liquid will warm everything up from your inside out. Are you guys take coffee and drink coffee in the morning? I know you're both coffee drinkers, but some people still don't take it in the backcountry. Is that something that you guys take in the backcountry?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just got turned on to that. It's the Four Sigmatic. It's like the mushroom elixir coffee, and it's like an instant. It's just a little packet of it, and you can pour it into hot water. I like it. Steven, he's kind of a coffee snob. I can, if it's warm
it's true, man.
And it resembles coffee, I like it. So, yeah, those are kind of fun to do, but yeah, we always have coffee. We always have coffee.
I've drank half a gallon since we started this podcast.
That is awesome. Well, perfect. Well, as far as when it comes time, you know, to start planning your meals out, Courtney, are you focusing on trying to hit, you know, a certain grams of fat, a certain grams of protein, a certain caloric intake? Are you trying to hit a certain number every day, or are you just trying to max it out as far as this is what we want to take and not be too much weight to take? Does that make sense?
Yeah. It does. So what I did last year is I wrote out a menu for every day for us. So I would put in, you know, even if it was going to be in a different order, I wanted to put in exactly what we were going to be having every day. Because if you just go, okay, here's a general list and a plan, you're going to miss, you know, or you have the potential to miss meals and go, crap, I'm all the way back here and I don't have a snack today, or I don't have a lunch today or something. So I actually wrote out a menu for us, for both of us, and did it that way. I've never been a calorie counter per se. Since switching to keto, I have started logging things just to make sure that I'm staying under, you know, 7% with my carbohydrates, but not necessarily for the backcountry, because we have a pretty good idea of what our food looks like. But for people who don't necessarily know, like you were saying, you know, you were surprised at, you know, how many carbohydrates are in everything, you know. So for people who might not have a very good understanding of what food and what calories they're eating, it might be good to, you know, to actually input recipes and to be able to, you know, figure them out that way. Mm-hmm. But we don't necessarily do that. I can, like I said, just figure out a pretty good idea of, you know, what the protein intake is we're getting and how many carbs we're having and if it's going to sustain us for being out there. And I try to always pack a little bit heavier meals calorically. So like I said, we'll do a little bit of like a tub of coconut oil, you know, like a small Tupperware or something so that we can add that fat in there and just boost the calorie content.
Gotcha. So,
and the nice thing about adding that.
No, go ahead. I didn't.
Now I'm starving. Thanks, guys. Thanks a lot.
I agree. I'm starving too. Keep going, Courtney. I didn't mean to cut you off. There was a slight pause and it just, yeah, I thought you were done. So sorry about that.
That's okay. I was pretty close to being done. I was just going to say, you know, the nice thing about taking that extra fat out there too is that you're going to be satisfied longer. So, you know, you never want to, not that, you know, a bugling bull is going to stop you and you're going, oh, I'm hungry and I need to stop. If you're doing that, you probably shouldn't be hunting. But, you know, you're going to be satisfied longer. So you're going to be able to continue to push up the mountain or down the mountain or follow the herd or whatever you need to do and not be feeling like, okay, I'm shaky, I'm hungry, I can't think, I need to stop. You're going to have a longer lasting satiety with that. So that's a good place to add in some calories.
Gotcha. Now, kind of two questions here. So I'll just ask one at first. I had heard somebody talking about like protein bars and the protein intake, and they said something about taking, when you're on a hunt like that, taking a protein bar that is just super high in protein but not much else really isn't all that beneficial for you. And I'm not 100% sure as to why that wouldn't be or why it would be. So what's kind of your input on taking things like protein bars that are just, you know, 26 to 36 grams of protein, and some of them, like the Kirkland bars, for instance, that we have, I think they have 2 grams of carbs, but they just have a ton of protein. So is something like that a good idea to take, or is that too much protein for your system at once when you're exerting that much energy?
It really depends on the individual and their composition. You know, if you know, Steven's 6'5" and 2 something, and
like 270 at least,
and I'm, you know, I'm 5'10 and 150 something. So I don't need the same protein that he does. So, you know, if we're somewhere and we're really pounding hard, if we're sitting in a tree stand, no, we definitely don't need that. If we're sitting in a blind or if we're not doing a whole lot, then we don't need to replenish that. But if you're out there on a long hunt and you're working for it, you're going up, you're going down, your body's getting sore, your muscles are being broke down, then sure, yeah, you need to replace that so that you can, you know, not be miserable, so that you can replenish what's being taken out of the muscles.
Gotcha.
I do, though, think that there is a overabundance of, you know, protein. People are protein shake for breakfast and then protein for lunch and a big steak for dinner and, you know, yeah, a protein bar here and there. And it's, you know, our extra protein turns into sugar. So the body doesn't just, it's not like the more protein, the better. It does need to be regulated, because your body can only store so much. And once that happens, but, you know, it turns to fat. It doesn't matter what the calorie is. If your body doesn't need it, it's going to be stored.
Yep.
So it's not necessary for everybody. And I don't think it's something that you would necessarily need to do every day. But, you know, for a bigger person who's really working hard, who, you know, might have a lighter protein, you know, lunch or dinner, it could be good and beneficial to replenish with a higher protein bar.
Gotcha. So with that, I mean, obviously it depends, like you said, on body size, but is there kind of a percentage of protein that you should shoot for?
Typically, you know, we kind of, Steven more specifically, when he's working, he'll go for about a gram per pound of body weight. If he's training really, really, really hard, it'll be a little bit higher. I don't go that high. I'm down closer to like maybe 0.6 per gram of, or per pound of body weight. But you know, again, everybody's different. It depends on your composition. It depends on how hard you're working. But kind of a more general guideline is about a gram per body pound per body
gotcha.
Weight.
Cool.
Yeah. I think that, you know, there's such a misconception, especially amongst men, that, you know, more is better. More is better, you know, and it's more power, and it's, you know, it's, this isn't an engine. It's not money. It's not something that you would, excuse me, naturally associate with more being better. There's a lot of research and studies showing us that, you know, an excess amount of protein can actually cause free radicals and can be associated with cancer. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff. So I think, you know, prior to going, okay, well, I'm going to get fill in the blank protein and I'm working out 4 days a week or 3 days a week or whatever it is. And I need to have 50 grams of protein per serving. It's like, well, your body probably isn't going to want to accept all of that. One, two, you're going to shock it. Three, you know, the little bit that you do need, probably I would say 20 to 25 grams per serving. Everything else, like she said, is just going to go to fat. It's going to be wasted and stored and not the good parts of your body. So, you know, that's a pretty big misconception.
And it's expensive. I mean, yeah, you know, people are thinking that they're, you know, spending their hard earned money on something that they really need. And sometimes they really don't. So it's good just to be aware of what your body requires and being really in tune with, you know, what certain nutrients and macronutrient levels, you know, feel like.
I gotcha. That's super interesting to me, because I, like I told you, I've never looked into all of it because I never had to. You know, I just would eat and just go, right. You know, and I just was like, man, there's got to be a way that I can feel more awake more often or not feel drained for, you know, 4 hours, yeah, in the middle of the day.
Right.
Like, there's got to be a way to do it more consistently. And that's when I was like, I'm going to have to start tracking it and learn how to do this. Because that's the worst,
yeah,
feeling in the world.
You, yeah, know, and there's, you know, there's so many
in the back country, and you come over this hill and you're starting to feel drained, and you look over on the next hillside and there's an animal that you really want to pursue, but you feel drained and you're like, great, now what?
yeah. You know, there's so many professionals out there too that you can just reach out to. And specifically, you know, in today's social media driven world, just, you know, drop a line. We answer questions like that all day long, but there's a lot of people that have that knowledge that have spent the you know, the months and years in school and learned it and perfected it, not only, you know, in the books, but out in those, you know, boots against the ground scenarios. There's a lot of tells too. Your body will tell you, you know, whether it's you might be a little crampy or you're gassy or you're, you know, you
have a headache.
You have a headache, yeah, or any of that kind of stuff. You know, when you're putting extra in your body, it's also causing all those internal parts of your systems to work more, right? So we don't always want that to be the case. If your body, you know, like when you shiver, when you're really cold and you know, like you get into specifically like really cold water and you get out, you tend to shiver. You see kids shivering. That's your body, you know, basically putting your muscles into this quick contracting scenario to warm you up. Well, that takes a lot of calories, right? So imagine if your internal organs were doing the same thing, trying to process all this extra, you know, you're burning these calories that you're not even aware of as you're burning calories that you are aware of, you know? So it's, yeah, like you're kind of doubling up. So your body will also tell you and respond to certain foods and nutrition and that kind of stuff. And if you pay attention to those signs rather than like, oh man, my buddy's, you know, he's the smelliest one in camp. It's like, okay, well, let's look at his diet.
Yeah,
you know,
must be wrong.
And not to say that I haven't been that person, you know, it's just dialing it in, listening to your body and putting a little science to it, you know, will go a long ways.
So if you guys want some more information or have questions on nutrition, I'm more than happy to answer them. You can find me on Instagram at Nutrition Realigned. Or on my personal page, Her Outdoor Journey. I'd love to answer questions and talk nutrition with you guys. You can get on my website as well, nutritionrealigned.com. And I do some personalized nutrition coaching, meal plans, itemized grocery lists, and just make sure that whatever your goals are being achieved in the best way possible and keeping health in mind.
And, you know, that works really well with our fitness training company, Elevation Fitness Training, which is a performance-based training system for outdoor athletes. An outdoor athlete is a very broad spectrum of person who uses their body in a functional manner to be successful in whatever it is that they're doing. You know, we happen to cater a very high percentage, you know, most, let's say probably 85 to 90% to hunters, you know, and that's not just bow hunters or gun hunters or whatever, but we've even got, you know, backcountry pack fishermen who will hike 10 miles and, you know, stay 3 days to fly fish, you know, and they'll live on a little bit of food that they take and the fish that they catch. So, you know, whether you're a hunter, hiker, any kind of endurance athlete, we have mountain bike racers, we've all kinds of stuff. Or if you just really want to be more functional when you hike, you know, that's what we cater to. We do very personalized, custom built training programs. ElevationFitnessTraining.com. Instagram is Elevation Fitness Training. You can find me at HuntFit_08 on Instagram, and we can answer any questions that you have, get you set up with a, you know, very personalized. This isn't a one size fits all or spin the wheel and hope you get something that works for today. This is a very intimate relationship when it comes to training, and we love working with people. And it's an online training platform, and we're having a lot of fun with it and changing a lot of lives and learning a lot ourselves. So you can find us, like I said, ElevationFitnessTraining.com or NutritionRealign.com for any of that nutrition needs. We'll be happy to help.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thanks, guys, for hopping on the show.
That is the end of part one with Stephen and Courtney of Elevation Fitness Training. Part two will go live next Wednesday on tips and tactics and full draw fitness. So now let's tune into our very first ever full draw fitness episode with Stephen and Courtney, founders of Elevation Fitness Training.
Hey everybody, welcome to Full Draw Fitness with Courtney and Steven of Elevation Fitness Training.
We're going to be going over everything from fitness to hunting, archery, and just being comfortable with your bow in the backcountry. So sit tight, get comfortable, and follow us along the journey of Full Draw Fitness. All right, here we are, Full Draw Fitness. We're going to go over a couple things today that we think is really going to benefit everybody as far as your fitness goes, hunting, archery, not falling on your face.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important to feel comfortable, be comfortable, and you know, just have a good handle on making sure that when you're out there, you're putting out the time, energy, and investment of going, you want to be feeling as good as you can be.
Heck yeah, for sure. So we're going to make today's podcast short and sweet. We've got a couple topics we wanted to touch on. One of them, Courtney, I'd like to ask you is, why is training with your bow so important for hunting?
Man, for me personally, I know that things can go two ways. It can either suck a lot or it can suck a little. And you just enjoy hunting so much more when you're prepared for the elements, whether that's terrain, conditions, you know, the environment, or, you know, animals don't cooperate. So a lot of times you're in one place and they're in the other and it's go time. So making sure that you're ready for that, you know, a lot of times will, you know, help with the success of a hunt.
Heck yeah, that's for sure. I know I've tried to control what the animals do several times and that never seems to work. So as far as training with your bow, you know, running or hiking or just shooting it, you know, all these things can play a big role with, you know, with the outcome of a hunt. You know, we tend to program a lot of our fitness clients with shooting their bows.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because that's, you know, we work with a lot of people who are bow hunters, but when they come to us, a lot of them have never trained, you know, with shooting with an elevated heart rate or training with their bow. So, you know, I have a lot of first timers come back and they're like, holy crap, that was way yeah. more, you know, that was a lot different than I expected. And, but it just makes sense. It makes sense because I've never shot at an animal or shot an animal where I was just as calm as could be. You know, there's some level of either you've exerted yourself or you're excited enough to where you're not just out there target practicing at, you know, 20, 30 or 40 yards.
Right.
You are ready. It's go time. So having the experience with that makes the skill of doing it a lot more successful.
Sure. Yeah. So I guess the old practice how you play comes into play with that for sure. You know, I know there's a certain point of ice in your veins with some folks can, you know, stand in front of a 6-point bull or a giant mule deer or a whitetail or something, and it doesn't even bother them. Doesn't seem to bother them. I'm not one of those people.
No, I'd like to be though. That'd be great.
Yeah. You've actually watched me shake out of my boots a couple years ago. So, when we say training with your bow can really help you hunting, you know, what we really wanted to touch on with that is, let's just say that you've got an area in your yard or at a range, and you've got, it doesn't really matter how far you're shooting, would you say? I think the most important thing is that you put yourself into a real life situation where you have to, you know, step up and over objects. You might sprint a little bit just to get your heart rate up to simulate maybe, you know, climbing a ridge or a steep hill or something like that. Getting on the ground, you know, having a heavy pack on or even just a mildly weighted pack, and just maneuvering yourself up off of the ground in a safe way, you know, with your bow in your hand. Let's say you slipped off of a log or something like that. So, you know, when you're programming for one of your clients who may be new to the, you know, running, shooting, exercising with your bow, what's kind of the few main things that you like to keep in mind to introduce that person to the new experience?
Well, you know, everybody's different and everybody comes from a different, starting point with their fitness. So it's important to remember that, you know, what works for one person doesn't work for the other. And that's something that I think is really awesome about our program is that it's very customizable to that individual. But, you know, working on core strength and stability, a lot of people want to get really strong, you know, working on, you know, the big muscle groups, but then we forget about everything that keeps those structures together and working well. Mm-hmm. So a lot of stability, you know, doing lateral step ups, even if it's, you know, if somebody's brand new, you know, just kind of diving in, doing them on a smaller platform, but making sure that we're working everything that holds the body together in a healthy way. Also working on core. I can't tell you how many times that, you know, I've had a pack on and my bow in my hand, and I go to go over some windfall and you don't realize how much core you're using. But if you're trying to be quiet and do that at the same time, you know, there's a lot of stability that you have to have. So, you know, shooting with an elevated heart rate, just learning to draw your bow too when your body's a little bit more fatigued is a whole different, you know, the stability is different, you know, you're holding against it different. So, you know, making sure that all of those things are, you know, important and focused on definitely help with my hunters in the backcountry.
Yeah, you know, I don't really have a lot to add to that, but I guess one of the pieces of feedback that I enjoy the most is working with a new client. And we say new clients because, you know, our folks get acclimated pretty quickly
to
exercising
they
with it. So, you know, getting the feedback of, holy cow, you know, I either shot really well or I shot poorly, or I enjoyed the experience of being so gassed and shooting and trying to figure out that the actual process of shooting my bow was more important than what I was doing for the exercise, if we're focusing on the actual shooting process. So, yeah, big deal. So you're saying it's important to have a strong core for balance, huh?
Absolutely.
Awesome. So one of the other topics we wanted to talk about today, was shooting with that elevated heart rate. We kind of touched on it there for a minute, but I think specifically just to focus for a minute on shooting with an elevated heart rate, we've been doing some classes at Bowtech, an archery fit style class, where we're just taking a group of people, you know, 15 to 20 people, and we're getting them redlined as a group, and they've got a certain amount of burden to take care of as far as exercises and sprints and core work and all that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden they have to make a good clean shot in front of a room full of people.
Yeah.
It's two things are happening here. One, some folks never shoot in front of other people. And then two, some folks aren't accustomed to exercising and getting their heart rate elevated to shoot. So what would you say is important about implementing that elevated heart rate into your shooting?
Again, I think it's just really important for overall getting yourself ready for the hunt.
It's one thing to, you know, feel like you're educated on where the animals are or your gear or have everything else dialed in. But if you're not, if you can be as prepared as you can be for the moment of truth, like that's where I want to be. And we do have a lot of people that come to those classes or again, that we work with that, that have never experienced that, but I've never had anybody go, man, that's stupid. You know, everybody is going like, wow, that's so different.
Yeah.
You know, everything from the moment that you put your hand on your bow and you begin to draw, it's not the same as when you've practiced any other time before that, especially for newbies. So, you know, again, getting yourself ready for what you're going to do, that's important. You know, being prepared for the moment of truth, for the things that you can't necessarily prepare for the best way you can, that's the golden ticket.
Man, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I mean, that takes me back to a time where, you know, I was pounding up windfall in the dark, following a giant herd of cows, and there was bulls screaming everywhere, and I finally get to the top of this hill, you know, and I was as fit as I've been as an adult at the time. And, you know, my heart rate was up there, but nothing that, you know, we hadn't trained, you know, in those parameters before. But the second I saw that gigantic herd bull up there, boom, boom, boom. I thought my heart was going to pound out of my chest. I feel like I just did 100 burpees nonstop. And I lost my cool a little bit because I hadn't trained with my bow in my hand, you know, at that level. So, you know, getting comfortable with that, getting acclimated with that for sure, you know, like I say, is as you would put it, the golden ticket for sure. So, you know, basically all that leads us into our last little gem that we wanted to touch on was just having overall familiarity with your bow, right? In any situation, moving, walking, hiking, you know, I know I've experienced it. Some of you out there might have as well. Just handling your bow, it can be cumbersome. It can sometimes be annoying depending on if you're holding it by the string or by the handle, or sometimes you're holding it by the quiver, or it's, you know, it's bouncing off of trees, or you've got it on your pack. I mean, you know, just being comfortable with that piece of equipment in your hand, walking through all kinds of, you know, just standard benign fields or a small rolling hill or even the backcountry is super important.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we kind of do a few different things with ours, whether it's, you know, on our bow snatcher, on our packs, or I really like to hold mine because I'm just that way. You know, I want to be ready for at any moment, you know, the biggest buck I've ever seen in my life is going to walk out in front of me, you know, but everybody's kind of different. You know, though it's important to have experience, you know, people think, well, I walk out and I shoot or I do these things. And, or there's a lot of people that don't ever shoot or touch their bow until it's hunting season, you know? So I just think that there's a lot of value in being able to move and be functional. And, you know, whether that's training with your bow or running sprints back and forth, you know, to be able to carry it and be comfortable with it. Because too, if somebody hasn't, you know, carried their bow or trained with it or shot it much, you know, and you get out there and you're spending, you know, dawn till dusk with your bow and your arm's going to get tired. Right. I mean, I know for me, even after having trained for a season, getting out there and by the end of the hunt, you know, the end of the long weekend or whatever it is, you're feeling it somewhere, you know, you get tired of carrying that bow. So yeah, having the strength and just the familiarity with it is definitely important.
You know, I think you touched on something really, really important is, you know, Courtney mentioned a pretty cool apparatus called the Bow Snatcher. And before we wrap this up, give those guys a look. They've got a pretty cool product that you can actually mount right to your pack and put a small horn that's, you know, an ounce or two tops on your bow, and you can actually hang your bow on your pack. But I think that having, like you said, having your weapon ready, if you're a photographer and your camera's in your pack, you're probably not going to be a super successful photographer, right? You need that thing at the ready. So having your bow out, you know, and ready at least to have an arrow knocked as quick as you can, with the least amount of movement, you know, is pretty good.
Well, and the nice important thing about the bow snatcher too, is that, you can actually have it mounted to your pack and then one arm reach back and grab it. So, you know, you don't have to take your pack off and you know, undo everything just to pick your bow off your back.
Sure.
It's pretty easy to use for somebody that has good shoulders.
Yeah, right. That's kind of how we found out that Courtney didn't have a good shoulder. We really utilized ours last year when I decided to rip my big toenail off the day before opening day. And we had to rely on mountain bikes to go a little bit further than I was capable of walking. So we were actually able to just throw those on our pack and pound down some logging roads with mountain bikes and then take them off. But yeah, cool product. You know, not to just shamelessly plug them because that's not what this was about. But, you know, getting comfortable with your bow, carrying it, shooting it, obviously, right? But training with it. Anything Absolutely. Else you want to add?
I think that pretty much covers it. I mean, if you have questions, feel free to reach out to us. You can email us or find us at www.elevationfitnesstraining.com. We're more than happy to answer any questions that you guys have, whether that's, you know, health, fitness, hunting, or, you know, just getting familiar with doing some of these full draw fitness kind of workouts.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Well, we hope you enjoyed the show today, and we look forward to bringing you some more tips, tricks, and fun little morsels about life at full draw with some fitness involved. So,
absolutely.
We'll see you guys soon.
Thank you for tuning into the show. It means a lot to us.
But seriously, though, I really appreciate your ear, and it would mean the world to me if you would rate our podcast. If you didn't like it, 1-star it. But if you did, a 5 is even better. Don't forget to comment, like, share, and hit that subscribe button. Thanks again for tuning into the show. Some other podcasts that you should definitely check out are
Eastman Elevating with Bride and Barney,
and Hunt Harvest Health with Ryan and Hillary Lampers.
Some other YouTube channels to check out:
Hardworking Hunter, Sterling's Extremes Outdoors, and Lane Walter Productions.
And a special thanks to
Maven Optics, Six Sight Gear, Dark Energy Tech, Shield Mountain Outdoors, The Outdoor Insiders, Iron Mind Hunting, Valkyrie Archery, and Gannett Ridge Sporting Equipment.